Welcome to the first episode of the Dabruti podcast. I'm Giordano Durante. I want these podcasts to be very varied. Sometimes I aim to have a guest on the show, and other times I'll just read a poem. Today I've got a few reflections prepared. I want to talk and think about middle age. I turned 40 in January this year, so I am, according to some definitions, just at the very beginning of that phase of life. By other definitions, I still have about 5 years to go. But anyway, the concerns of middle age are very much a part of my lived experience. And middle age is probably more, it seems to me, a stance on life than a determinate age range. So I'm curious about middle age because I'm living it, which is why I picked up a book a few weeks ago by the philosopher Christopher Hamilton about this period, which the blurb characterizes as a time when the body is both at a peak and at the beginning of collapse. That in itself struck me as odd. I hadn't heard other people or friends characterize middle age as a peak in any sense. All I'd heard was a language of decline, of early morning back pain, endless hangovers and lethargy. Gone is a bloom of youth. It's all downhill now. So I was reading this book by Hamilton. It's called Middle Age and it's published by Acumen. It's a strange and unexpected book, enjoyable in many ways, but also in parts too tied to his personal circumstances to be of wider appeal. The main driving story in the book is the author's discovery that his biological dad was a former teacher who'd had an affair with his mother. This life-altering knowledge leads to further reflections about self-identity and feelings of guilt. The part that resonated with me most was a section on nostalgia. That's nostalgia not in the traditional sense of homesickness, but that longing for the past which we all at some point suffer from. And suffering is exactly the way Hamilton characterizes it. He calls nostalgia a seductive but unhealthy emotion. I think middle age is a time steeped in nostalgia. Round about my mid to late 30s, I started writing poems that looked back wistfully to my youth, to the way Gibraltar was then. But these poems, for me, were just a way of recreating the past. I wasn't implying that the past was in any sense better, just different. Because nostalgia is a great editor. It will cut away the unpleasantness, the boredom, the insecurity of the past, and will yield an intense, evocative film of highlights. Yes, New Year's Eve in 1999 was a fantastic drunken outing. I remember the promise of a new millennium. I was still free of the cynicism that such events inspire these days. But surely it was also unbearable for all the usual reasons. It wasn't all unbridled joy, and yet that's what we cling to. Even these days we're in now, with all their confusion and susceptibility to global events, are laying the seeds for tomorrow's nostalgia. Hamilton says it's common to cling to a past that wasn't even that happy, when memory doesn't edit out the awkwardness of our previous selves, but we still long for this imperfect time. What can explain this? One suggestion he mentions is that we do so because our past is so deeply a part of who we are. The person I am now was determined by everything that happened before this moment, good and bad. In a sense, to look back and want to rescue these now historical stages of oneself is an act of affirming and celebrating one's identity. There's also the puzzle of what exactly one is longing for when one looks back with a nostalgic gaze. It's not clear to me that I have a definite view of who I was 20 or 25 years ago. The picture is fuzzy. If I were to meet the 16-year-old me now, would I find him obnoxious? Probably. Hamilton says, correctly I think, that we seem to aim for youth as a whole, as a kind of undifferentiated, non-specific presence, the mood of one's life at the time. Music is key here, and it so often triggers and feeds my own nostalgia. The link is quite direct. This is music that I listened to when I was younger, although a lot of it has fallen away like chaff. Most of it didn't stand the test of time. What survives is music like Belly, Suede, Eros el Silencio, David Bowie, The Doors. If I play the Para Siempre live album of Eros, for example, released in 1996, I'm dragged back to my friend's bedroom, a winter drizzle outside, and an ashtray full of his mum's silk cuts, which we'd smoked, wearing our Bayside uniforms. Hamilton, in his book, discusses the power of music. He says this power resides in how the music of our youth, the music of nostalgia, carries a more or less private system of signs. What's odd is that some of the music that sets off nostalgic longing in me wasn't even music I was acquainted with in my teens and twenties. The Cure and their songs of whiny torment, morose longing and alienation are built for the kind of youth I had. So it isn't, after all, a direct causal link, the music of the past causing my current feelings of loss and longing, but more of a common mood shared by the music, whether or not I was acquainted with it, in the mid to late 90s. Place is also a trigger for many. For me, it's that stretch of Gibraltar from Trafalgar Cemetery to La Alameda, because barring the demolition of the Queen Cinema, it's a part of Gib that has remained unchanged since my late teens. Walking there is a walk through the past. I'll jump around from topic to topic here. That's one of the reasons I launched the podcast, to be more casual and free-ranging than I allow myself to be in written pieces. Something revealing happened to me a year or two ago. We had a friend's reunion, one of those jugs of beer and fried fish feasts at Jumpers on a Friday night. Now, these are guys I might communicate with a few times a week, but meet up with only rarely. The physical ravages of middle age were clear to all. Nobody expects to be the slim, nimble teen of the late 90s. We have less hair, and the little we have is increasingly grey. We've ballooned outwards too. Those jugs of beer and calamares are taking their toll like never before. But there was another change I didn't expect. In conversation about current affairs and whatever viral post was doing the rounds, I was struck by how ossified they'd all become, how stagnant in their opinions. Their views, once worn with the lightness and frivolity of youth, every opinion and ideology and experiment and living back then, had hardened into dogma. Not just that, they'd become socially and morally more conservative. These are the guys I got drunk with. These are people who were rebellious in school. We were part of a generation, like all others, that used recreational drugs. And yet there they were, voicing doubts about the legalization of cannabis and arguing for tougher measures on criminals. Middle age had made them dull conformists. And this isn't a political point. They just happened to lean right. It's a psychological point. The fact that their views had solidified so much. They were full of so much certainty. This would have been odd to me if they'd shifted to the left too. For me, middle age has become a time of doubt, not certainty. What's worse, the encounter made me examine myself even more closely. Had I also become like that? Some washed-up conservative repeating a bunch of clichés? I saw that in my friends. Perhaps I didn't have the necessary distance to see it in myself. If I found something unpalatable in the person I had become, would I hide it from myself? But here's what really puzzled me. They had become clearly identifiable people, beings with a settled identity and nature. Is this then what happens at middle age? Is this when you fall into the mould of who you are? That would mark it off neatly from the follies of youth. The trying out of different personas dwindles over time until you become a paunchy 40-year-old holding forth on current affairs with all the opinionated confidence of an expert. This is middle age as stagnation. That was frightening to me. A daydreamer, a loafer, happy to dabble in different projects. How could I become someone in particular? What would I become? Would it be fixed by my career? I can't contemplate anything more suffocating. And people are like that at this age. They've found what they want to do or need to do to get by. This is the promised land when asked in the school classroom, what do you want to be when you grow up? If you're not there at 40, surely something's gone wrong. I can't help but see this as limiting. But my own brand of floating from job to job probably isn't for everyone either. Middle age for me has been mixed so far. A lengthy illness at the start of the year, starting just weeks after my 40th birthday, reminded me of the frailty and vulnerability of the human body. Despite this, I'm probably close to the healthiest I've ever been since giving up the bad habits that youth could tolerate. The lasting changes go deeper. Middle age has brought a comforting lowering of expectations about life and other people. But rather than causing me to retreat into cynicism, it's been liberating. One other powerful feeling is this sense of time running out. Hamilton says that the middle-aged feel the pressure of time, but this has given a new and urgent energy to my days. There's still so much to do, so much to read and see and listen to, and from my perspective of the 40th year, there's no time for my usual procrastination. Middle age occupies a unique vantage point. We can be, it seems, in the very thick of life, but also detached from it, eyeing it with a judicious gaze. For example, it can be a time where one might be at the peak of one's career, but also wise enough to know that a career isn't important. To know that talks of peaks and such is just more nonsense to add to the farce we navigate every day. And so middle age teeters between absurdity and wisdom, for it is the age at which, simultaneously, we risk the embarrassment of a midlife crisis with a sports car, the torrid affair, and the hair transplant, and yet have the good sense to sneer at this foolishness. The age at which we both embrace a form of kiddledhood and ridicule those who do. A time when we can laugh at ourselves from this ambivalent position between youth and old age in a deeper way than was possible before. Thank you, and join me for our next episode when I'll be talking with the writer, Hamit Hernandez.